Hello, 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 and welcome to the Sober Butterfly Podcast. Today, we are joined with a very special guest. I have Christina with us. Christina is over from Sisters in Sobriety, and we are here to share a little bit more about our sober journeys. I want to hear more about what led Christina to sobriety. Funny enough, not really funny, but something that I'm dealing with right now that I saw Christina touch on, which is actually what sparked this conversation, was this idea of how does one introduce yourself to the world as a sober person? What does that look like? I'm trying to maneuver the dating scene, which we'll get into, and I just don't know how to have that awkward dance with people in the beginning. So, Christina and I are going to get into all of that in this week's episode. So, welcome to episode 109. Christina, thank you so much for joining us. How are you this lovely evening? You're in Atlanta, right? So, Eastern time zone. Okay, yes. So she's in the greater Atlanta area. So, good evening to you. My last week in Thailand. I'm crying. So, Christina, you were actually one of my sober spotlights a few months back. I really just vibed with your energy. I love that you were like a mom, a sober mom who was unapologetically living her best sober life. I know that you are a green thumb. You like to plant and you like to garden. So maybe one day you can teach me the tricks and tips for the trade, because I do not have a green thumb. I've killed every houseplant, unfortunately, that I've been gifted, because I know better than to buy myself a plant. But like every now and then someone will give me one and I'm like, you don't understand the stress you're causing me now, like the responsibility. But anyway, so just to sort of go into the conversation, I wanted to hear more about your story, how you arrived to this place where you recognized that sobriety was the best way to live your life, and then hear a little bit more about your story before sobriety.
Absolutely. So, you know, I got sober March 15th, 2020. Not in the greatest way possible. I got sober because I was trying to save my marriage. We know, you know, from experience now that we can't get sober for anybody else. We have to only get sober for ourselves. And I learned that pretty quickly. But it did open the door to show me, you know, that there's a better way. I was a functioning alcoholic, you know. I was successful in my career. I graduated high school. I owned a house. I was married, had a child. But it caught up to me pretty quickly. I was making very destructive, bad decisions in my life. Was just blaming alcohol on everything instead of realizing that I was using alcohol instead of coping with anything. In the first couple months sober, you know, you kind of realize like, I don't have any coping mechanisms, you know? So through that beginning time in sobriety, I did not save my marriage, but that was what was best. And we co-parent, there's no issues there. But, you know, it gave me the opportunity to say there is a better way, and continued my sober journey from there.
That's amazing. So March 15th is the date I heard, 2020.
That's right.
That's like a couple days before the world shut down. If I'm like, if the timeline is right in my mind.
Yes.
So what was that like? Like, how did you maneuver sobriety in those early days? Because the world seems like it's on fire and ending. Your marriage is, you know, in an unstable place. And, you know, you're trying to get sober. I can't imagine what that's like. And then also be the best mom possible. So what coping mechanisms did you discover to maintain your sobriety during that time?
Absolutely. So early in the beginning, actually, being locked down was probably the best for me, honestly. I did have my early sobriety during lockdown, and I am working in an industry. I work in the insurance industry, work comp specifically, and it's very alcohol driven, happy hours, any networking events, anything like that. There's always free alcohol. We would get bottles of champagne for Christmas from vendors and partners. So having that out of the way was beneficial. Not having that drive home to stop at the liquor store every day was beneficial. There was no liquor in the house. And so I was in this little bubble, and it was nice, honestly. Coping mechanisms, definitely crafting. I love to craft. I was big in crafting before. I'm a sewist, I'm constantly drawing, painting, sewing something. So I was able to spend a lot more time doing that now that I wasn't just drinking all the time. And then journaling became really big for me. You know, when we put down the alcohol, we reveal the issues that lie underneath. Right. And so being able to really work through those with journaling helped tremendously. And then therapy. I never did AA or, you know, inpatient rehab, anything like that. But I did start twice a week therapy and that helped tremendously.
I really like the way that you framed your experience in COVID, like having that pause button to sort of recollect and figure out how to break routines and systems that were driving you to drink, or not even driving you to drink, but just the routine, right? Like I, for example, had to stop grocery shopping for a few weeks because I just couldn't go into the store, Trader Joe's namely. It was right next door to their wine shop. I couldn't force myself to like not go there. So I really like that. But I like the positivity that COVID brought to you, because I think I hear so many people struggle or tell me that they struggled with drinking. And I also had that experience too, where it was like, I wasn't trying to get sober at the beginning of COVID, but then the isolation, I think so many people turn to alcohol as a friend or as a companion. And so, yeah, I really like that you were able to maneuver that space in a more positive way and not have those, like I said, routines sort of driving you. Therapy is also really big, and therapy is actually what got me sober. I had no desire to be sober, so I was also a functioning alcoholic, but I had no desire to quit. So I was very much just like sharing in my therapy sessions on a weekly basis, you know, just what my life consisted of. And I didn't realize sometimes you need a third party, but my therapist clearly identified alcohol as being the common denominator to a lot of the issues I was facing and dealing it with. And I just had a really hard time removing it from my life because it was more than a pastime. It was a friend. It was confident. It was just something that I leaned on. That coping that you referred to is definitely what I was doing during that time. But that's great. So you've been sober for a little over 2 years now.
Yeah, it'll be 2.5 years on the 15th of September.
Oh my gosh. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. That's amazing. So you got sober, or you tried to get sober to save your marriage, which I love that you also recognize that you can never get sober for anyone outside of yourself, really. Like it could be a good like driving motivation in the beginning, but to stay sober for someone, that's not going to work. But so anyway, that was sort of like your motivation in the beginning. And then you mentioned that it didn't actually work out, but things are great now. So I'm wondering, was that triggering for you in your sobriety? Because I'm just imagining if you're doing it for an external reason and then that reason doesn't follow through, were you able to, you know, maintain your sobriety? Did you relapse? Was that triggering? I'm very curious to hear more about that.
Well, I stayed sober. Once I, you know, got sober on March 15th of 2020, we stayed together for another 9 months. And what actually happened over that time was I realized that the person that I was within that marriage was not really me. My ex wanted to get a divorce from me. And so that was my, like, I'm going to get sober and that's going to fix all the problems. But there were, that was the surface. There were so many more problems. Yep. And a lot of that was masked by the alcohol. I was very unfaithful. I cheated a lot. That was the one of the final, you know, straws that broke the camel's back in our relationship. And finally having a place where I was clear enough to take responsibility for what was going on, but then to also realize that this is not what's best for me and this is not what's best for you or for our child, you know?
Right.
So it actually gave me almost more motivation, knowing that through sobriety, I was discovering who I really was. And So the separation was difficult. The divorce is difficult. Like, all those things are hard, but it led me to a person who I truly authentically loved and who I truly authentically am. So yes, it was definitely triggering. It definitely was difficult. There were plenty of times where I wanted to drink. My sober support, my family, my sister-in-law, which she's my sister, she's my best friend. I was on the phone with her daily, like, I want to go to the liquor store, so I'm going to sit here and talk to you on the phone because this shit is hard, you know?
Yes.
And so just having that support through that, but it just made me feel really strong and confident in myself that I can get through this, you know?
I love that you were searching for something, but in reality, you were looking for yourself, right?
That's
like, sometimes I think that, like, we are just so determined to force certain things to, and instead of just, like, flowing. And through that process, you rediscovered, you know, who Christina is at the core. And like, that wasn't even in alignment to the marriage that you were in. So that's so beautiful. I really like that. And I find that, like, when you were talking, I was just thinking about feeling your feelings. Like, that is probably the hardest part, at least for me, in sobriety.
Yes.
When you feel triggered, it's like, okay, well, what is triggering you? And like, that for me was the piece that was missing, like not really truly sitting in the uncomfortability of feeling the feeling and just wanting it to go away. And the easiest way to do that was just to lean on my trusted ally, which was alcohol. And I don't know if this is what you experienced in terms of your infidelity, but for me, a lot of the, like, alcohol was just the common denominator that led me to create chaos in all realms of my life. So for me, like, I was a lot more, I don't like the word promiscuous, but I can't think of another word for now. I was sleeping around basically a lot more. And that was also in the therapy piece, what really drove my therapist to be like, you're engaging in high risk behaviors because you're drunk and hooking up with people that you shouldn't or probably wouldn't if you were in a sober mind. So that was something else that was driving me. Did you find that alcohol was causing you to make poor decisions outside of your marriage as well?
Absolutely. Alcohol was allowing me, was giving me the excuse to make the poor decisions, right?
Right.
The poor decisions were rooted in trauma that wasn't addressed, you know, confidence issues. One of the things I discovered through therapy and through giving up alcohol that, you know, I had no self-confidence and my seeking behavior was always to get validation. And I did that through my body. And that would have, I just thought I'm super confident and like I put it out there. It's not a big, and it was, no, it was, I have no confidence and I need somebody to come and want me for me to feel confident. You know, alcohol allowed me to always have this, oh, I was drunk. You know, you can't really blame me because I was drunk. Like, I never had blackouts or anything like that. So I could never use that as an excuse, but it would just be like, I was just out of my mind. Like I was wasted. What am I going to do? You know?
Well, I did have a lot of blackouts and I would use that as an excuse and sort of like remove myself. It was like an outer body experience, right? Like I was just like, well, that's not who I am, yet I'm the person that's consuming this substance every single day.
Absolutely.
And then using the same tired excuse over and over again. I think also, like, I was listening to like Huberman Lab. This is another podcast that I really like, and he did an episode on alcohol recently, and he was saying for people who, you know, are maybe predisposed to genetic factors that drive alcoholism or like that have that gene, right? Because gene expression turns on differently. So you never really know. But one of the clues or the red flags really is if you feel more alive when you drink. So like some people, they have a drink, they have two, they're like, I'm done. I can't have any more. Yeah. I'm sleepy. It's a depressant technically. But for me, no, I felt alive. I am the type of person, like, the more I drink, the more I'm like ready to get down to business. I'm like, oh, where's everyone going? So that's definitely something that I recognize now. And that was driving me to drink even more because I lacked the confidence that you mentioned, and alcohol turned me on even more, ramped me up to where I felt like I had all this confidence and I was outgoing. But that's not who I was. And actually, when I became sober, I used to think I was really extroverted. And now I've learned that I'm actually not that extroverted.
Yes.
Like, I'm social, but like, I also need tons of me time to recoup.
Yes. Yes. I've had very similar thought processes to that. I am an extrovert. I do like to be around people and be out and doing things. But sobriety let me know that, you know, I also need that time to recoup, to, you know, spend time with myself, you know, taking care of myself, all that is needed as well.
Absolutely. Which kind of drives us to where I wanted to go with this episode as well, which is hearing more about how does one as a sober woman or as a sober person, how do you go about expressing that to people? Because like, I don't want to wear a name tag. Hi, my name is Nadine and I'm sober. Please don't ask me to drink, or please don't, you know. And I know that you said you work in insurance or you work in an industry that is social. I'm in a very social city. I'm based in New York. I feel like I'm constantly being invited to different events. And in the beginning of my sobriety, I really had to isolate myself. But I'm in a place now where I feel more comfortable in my sobriety, but I don't necessarily feel comfortable in expressing how I am a sober woman because of all of the, you know, stereotypes that comes along with that. because of misconceptions about what that really means. Quite frankly, me still trying to figure out who I am entirely in my sobriety. So I'm wondering if you, A, didn't mind sharing a little bit more about the recent experience you had when you went out with a gentleman and he sort of did that for you. And then also just in general, how you approach, or do you approach, how do you approach your sobriety with other people and talking about it?
So for that instance in particular, I was shocked. I'm not going to lie. Just the way that he we were going out, we were going to an event. He let me know that there was going to be drinks there. He made sure I was okay with that. He was like, I got you. And I just assumed by like, I got you meant like he was going to support me in the fact that I wasn't drinking and he was going to kind of have my back through that. But when we walked through the door, before he introduced me, said who I was, he was just like, she's sober. Don't give her any drinks. Don't offer her a drink. I got her all night. And I was like, whoa.
So Christina, was this a date? Like, so was this a date? Was this like a friend? Was it just teetering on the line?
Yeah.
So he knew you were sober. And so he invited you to an event, right? And then he was just like, there was no real clear discussion about how you would approach the drinking. Assuming, was it like an open bar or was it just like?
It was a lounge and there was bottle service.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So then you get there and he's just like making an announcement to the staff, or was it just like to anyone?
It was to the party. It was like to the group of people that we were there, we were there to see. And so, it was a little bit uncomfortable. I'm not one to get embarrassed really easily, but I know I was bright red in that moment. Like, okay. But honestly, it was kind of nice. Nobody brought it up. Nobody offered me a drink. He kept my non-alcoholic. I just had soda water at the Splash Cranberry all night. He kept it full all night long. So I was able to have conversation like I normally would at an event without having that constantly be brought up, which I am the type of person, I'm fine. Let's talk about it. Because I do want to break the stigma. And I do want people to see, oh, like, she's a blast still and she doesn't have to drink. So I'm down for that. But you know, there are times when it's like, I just want to enjoy the atmosphere, the party, just like you guys are. I don't want to have the conversation constantly. So what it brought to light for me was if I am going to an event with a person like this, that probably should be a conversation that's had ahead of time. Now, if I'm just going out with my best friend or, you know, going to dinner with my family, they all know. They already know. So like a conversation doesn't need to be had. But in situations like this, that might be something that I need to have a conversation about.
That's really nice. And nobody asked you at that particular lounge or that party why you were sober. Did anyone ask you that? Or was it just sort
nobody
of like
accepted? Nobody asked me. It was just really accepted. Nice. It was. And he was... like he was a part of the group that we were going to see. So I think they just, it was kind of like an authority figure putting his foot down, like, this is what's going on. So we're not going to, you know, and so it just kind of was, and we all had a great night. I don't run into a ton of situations like that where I'm in a situation with a whole bunch of people that don't know, and I would have to be introduced that way. But that did create a scenario for me where I was like, I need to have a game plan going forward. And so I've kind of come up with one with that situation happening.
Okay, well, I want to hear your game plan because I'm still trying to figure mine out. Before you get into your game plan, really quickly, I just want to share, like, I'm dipping my pinky toe, my pinky nail into the dating pool. I'm not quite ready entirely, but I feel like I want to get out there a little bit too before I forget how to date and be a normal person. But like, as I'm on the apps, right, I explicitly write, like one of the prompts, the silly prompts on Hinge is like, what's a fun fact that surprises people about you? And so I put, I don't drink, very plainly.
Yes.
Some guys must just be looking at pictures because they completely ignore that and still invite me to a bar or something like, let's get a drink. Then there are guys who are like, oh, that's super cool. And I feel like I'm attracting a certain type of guy that's like, I don't drink either. That's amazing. But it just like brings me back to a very uncomfortable. So I took a hiatus from dating because I just had a lot going on with sobriety that first year. But last summer in particular, I was in London at Soho House and this guy basically booed in my face. Like, and he was a friend of a friend who was interested in me romantically. But the last time he saw me, I was like, drinking heavily. So like I was always like the fun one, the wild one. And we're at the bar. He asked me before he went to the bar. I mean, we've been hanging out all night, by the way. Like we went to dinner and I wasn't drinking, of course, the entire night. So we get to Soho House and he's like, oh, what do you want from the bar? So I say like, similar to you, I'm like seltzer and whatever, lime. And so then he ushers me over to the bar. He's like gone for 5 minutes. And then he's like literally like flagging me down. Like, come here, come here. So I'm thinking like, oh, like what's going on? So I go to the bar and he has shots lined up for us. And he's like, come on, Nadine, come on, come on. Seriously, like really, you're not going to drink? Like really pressuring me in front of people. And I'm just like, I said, no, like I don't drink. Like, where's my seltzer? And then he was just like, boo. Like he literally booed in my face, like thumbs down and everything in my face. And I was just like, I wish I had stood up for myself more in that moment. But that was a triggering for me. I almost took the shot just for the social pressure. But yeah, absolutely. So I want to hear more about your game plan because I need to know now how to maneuver if someone ever tries me like that again or just like giving them a heads up or I don't know what the best way to approach the situation is. But anyway, I want to hear more about what your game plan is.
Well, my game plan would probably be a little different than yours because I am Pink, you said the toenail. Maybe mine's just like the tip of the toenail. I was in a relationship for 15 years. So I'm like,
wow.
I'm 33 years old and I haven't been single since I was in high school. So, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. But so I don't do the dating apps, but I do like what you're doing there by putting it in your profile. I think that's a great step there to just have it out there, out in the open. But if I'm out in a public place and I'm approached to have a drink, somebody wants to give me a drink, something like that, I just say I'm sober. I don't even say I'm not drinking or I don't want to drink. I just say I'm sober because for whatever reason, putting that label on it seems to get through to people a little bit more than just, I'm not drinking. There, you know, what I noticed is if I'm not drinking, are you pregnant? Like, are you on some medication?
Like dot, dot,
are
dot.
You just, right, exactly.
Explain
what's
yourself
the reason
now.
Behind this? Let me see if I can talk you out of it kind of situation, you know? Now, I did have a situation with a gentleman who I told I didn't drink. He was like, oh, that's totally cool. But like, I bet I can get you to trust me enough that you would be comfortable to drink with me. And I was like, no.
It has nothing to do with you. What?
Nothing.
That's worse than my boo, actually. I bet I can get you to trust me enough.
Yes.
Who
yes.
Do you think you
like
are?
It had anything, exactly. Like it had anything to do with him. But, you know, so I think putting it out there that I'm sober, I wear this bracelet almost everywhere I go. It has the sober symbol.
Oh, bring it closer.
What is
it?
There's something. The recovery symbol on there.
Amazing. It's beautiful. Triangle.
You know, just exactly. So my Jeep has Sisters in Sobriety all over it. That's, you know, cute. Like I keep it out there. I make it known. I use it in social situations where, like I am, I'm super talkative. I'm an extrovert. In social situations where we're just getting to know new people, you know, I do a lot of times will use it as a talking subject,
same.
Something to bring up and just, you know, this has been my experience. And I think I like to do it because people have a preconceived notion that sobriety means you're boring and that you don't have fun and you don't go out. And I'm like, but look at me, like I'll be the first one out on the dance floor, but all the rest of y'all got to get drunk before you come out here. Like I'm already out there,
exactly.
You know, so. I do use it as a way to kind of break the ice sometimes. But as far as the dating goes, that's been a tricky one. Similar to what you said, I've had people who are like, that's super cool. Like, that's awesome. And there seems to be a threshold where like it's almost like they run out of game.
Yeah.
It's like my next move was to bring you wine and yes, yeah, with a bottle of wine or like let's go hang out at the bar. Like I don't really want dinner, it's late, and they don't know what to do anymore after that. So that has definitely, it just weeds people out, honestly. You know, I don't need to, I'm not seeking a partner out. What I say is I'm energetically open, you know. If it happens naturally and organically, that's great, but I find that it kind of does weed people out.
It's a filter,
most
for sure.
It is a filter. It absolutely, you get to a place in any communication with, I'm bisexual, so man or woman, where if there's nothing else there besides let's get drunk, it just falls off, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that's okay. Like, I'm down for it because I don't need to be with somebody who's sober, but I don't want to be with a daily drinker. I don't want to be with somebody who thinks that that's the only way that we can go out and have fun or let loose. So it weeds those people out.
What are you doing for fun? How do you have fun? So you're, I love that you're showing people through just like who you are, like at your essence, like, hey, like I'm a fun person. Right. Here I am not drinking. So I'm wondering, is there anything that you do outside of just like even having conversations at parties, but just in general, what you do to have a good time sober?
Yeah. So I love to dance. So I go out dancing. I am green thumb and outdoorsy. So I love to camp and hike. To be quite frank with you, I have made it a point, especially this point in my sobriety, that I don't necessarily need to do things that don't involve alcohol. I want to be able to do all of those things and not need the alcohol and be around it and it'd be fine. You know? So absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's difficult. Like, here's the thing. I'm not going to a bar. If all that there is to do is sit there and drink, I'm not doing it, you know?
Yeah.
But there are ways to be able to integrate things that you used to do and enjoy, but do them without alcohol.
I'm with you. Like, I definitely don't want to exclude activities that involve alcohol, like, but right. I'm not going to go to a place that everyone is completely wasted or the only thing to do is drink, because energetically, drink. I just feel like we are calibrating on very different levels when someone is drunk and I am sober. It's like, I'm trying not to judge, but I'm being quite honest. I am judging because I'm like, this conversation sucks. Like, I don't want to talk to you.
Oh, there's always a cutoff point. I'm always the first person to leave the party. I'm always the first person to leave the event. A couple of my like rules is I always drive myself. I'm not riding with anybody else because
that's smart.
There's this point and it's typically distinguished by when people start telling you the same story or the same joke, like over and over again. And you're like, okay, y'all are done. Y'all are on a different level now. It's time for me to go. And I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything because honestly, like when you really think about it, once everybody gets to that point, what are they really doing? What are they really accomplishing? Are they going to even remember what they did tomorrow at that point?
Exactly.
You know? So I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything. I do want to mention though, that early in sobriety, I did definitely isolate. I did stay to myself. I did not go to events or parties or anything like that where I was going to be surrounded by alcohol because I wasn't comfortable enough within my sobriety yet to do that.
Same.
I'm very family oriented, my immediate family and my extended family. And even things like me and all my cousins, we call ourselves Tier 2. So we do a trip together and most of them drink. And so even in situations like that, where that's like my family, we're super close, there's still conversations had about like, okay, y'all have gotten to that point and now I'm going to bed and don't make me stay up. Like all that stuff is still discussed beforehand. So I do think it is important to remember that sometimes we do have to have that period, whether it be in early sobriety or even later on, if we ever feel uncomfortable in a situation, it's totally fine to be like, this ain't for me no more. I'm going.
I love that, boundaries. And I really like that. First of all, the Tier 2 is really cute. I'm assuming it's like the mid-generation, like, and then your kids will be Tier 3 and so on and so forth.
Our kids are Tier 3. My parents are Tier 1. Yeah.
That's so funny. I love that. That's really cute. But even with family, like, I really like that you set those boundaries up front. That's something that I'm also working on, like having discussions, communication about what I need. Because I think in early sobriety, I isolated. I was very sensitive, as many people are. And I didn't express what I needed from people, yet I expected them to know what I needed when I didn't even know what I really needed. So I love that you're having those upfront conversations with people that you know that love and care about you. But like being around people that you know turn up, it's like, I'm not here to like ruin your fun, but just so you know, I'm not going to partake in that, and please don't ask me to, because that's another piece. Yep. It's like, I think people are like, no, Christina, come, like you know, because they're having such a good time and they think it's fun in this moment. I'm like, holler at me tomorrow morning, okay? Like, yeah. When you know you're hungover, like, I'm gonna be like, yeah, come for this, come on this run with me, come on let's do it.
Yes.
Like, you know, it's just like, I don't force the situation, please. Like, I'm telling you, I'm good, like, believe me. Yeah. When I say that. But yeah, I like that you're doing that upfront. Has there ever been awkward situations that have come up where you tell someone you're sober and they don't respond well to it, or you feel like they're not respecting the boundaries that you have set around your sobriety? Yeah.
I work remotely now. After the pandemic, they realized, hey, we can all do our jobs from home, so no need to come back to the office. So coworkers that I used to go to those happy hours with and go to those events with, and, you know, with the partners and the vendors, basically thought I was bullshitting. They were like, we've been around you, we've been at those events, you're not an alcoholic. Like, if I was trying to create a persona to maybe get clout on the internet or something, like that's where that was coming from.
That's terrible.
It is terrible. It is terrible. And it wasn't even necessarily that boundaries were crossed. It was just, there was no respect there, because who are you to know what was going on in my life? You know, the people that were closest to me, even those people were like, I didn't see it. But now that you're telling me about the things that were happening behind closed doors, I understand. So yeah, that's probably been the worst. And those people just aren't in my life anymore. You know, it's just like, okay, like, I don't, there's no benefit to having you be around at this point. But again, it shows me the ones that aren't supposed to be around, you know?
Exactly. It's really affirming in that way.
It is. It absolutely is. I've gotten to a place within myself where I don't take offense to that. You know, back in the day when I had no self-confidence, it was drinking and like, I need you to love me, I would have been like, no, please come back, you know? But now it's like, no, like, good riddance, you know?
Right.
But most of the time what happens, that's right. Most of the time, it's just, they kind of see their way out. They just stop. If they're uncomfortable with the fact that I'm don't drink, then they just kind of disappear.
Not that we should like necessarily diagnose or like assess other people, but I'm curious, do you think that those coworkers, for example, didn't think that you were an alcoholic or had a drinking problem because they were right in the trenches with you drinking as much? And so it might even be a little bit of like, oh damn, well, she has a problem.
Absolutely.
Like, she can't have a problem because that means I might have a problem situation.
Exactly. Yeah. I have 100%. And you're right. I'm not diagnosing anybody. I'm not putting anything on anybody else. And I challenge the people close to me in my life to take a look at their relationships, all of their individual relationships with alcohol. Not because I think that they're alcoholics, but because I think everybody could benefit from just taking a moment and saying, you know, am I using alcohol to cope? Am I using alcohol to celebrate, to have a good time? I mean, we attach alcohol to all of these emotions and it becomes so normalized that we don't even realize, like, can we do any of these things without it? So I definitely think that when people get really defensive about my sobriety, it's because if they didn't, they would have to take a long look in the mirror in regards to their relationship with alcohol.
Christina, you said that beautifully, because that's exactly what I experienced in the beginning when I was most vulnerable. Like, now I'm like, whatever, like, you can say whatever you want to me. Like, it's not going to impact my sobriety. But in the beginning stages, when I was telling even like people that I know love me and support me, like when I was expressing my concerns with my relationship with alcohol and how I thought I had a true problem, and I not even thought, I knew I did, right? Like, a lot of people still were trying to get me to drink. And at the time, I was just like, wow, like, it cut me at my core. I'm like, here I am bleeding. My heart is bleeding, and I'm telling you, and you're still trying to get me to drink. But like you said, it has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with them evaluating maybe their relationship with alcohol and recognizing, if this is my drinking buddy and she's saying that she has a problem, damn, like, what does that mean for me? So
yeah.
I've now learned to not take things as personally, but it really sucks that people feel as though they can tell you what your relationship was like with alcohol.
Absolutely.
Whether they saw it or not, it's like, you have no idea what's going on behind closed doors, inside my mind. Like, and truly, alcohol is a depressant. So I was using it as a stimulant, which is weird for a lot of times.
Yeah.
But the depressive part was making me depressed, even more.
Yeah.
Like, I was already like depressed not dealing with other things, but yes, the alcohol was fueling a lot of my depression even more.
Absolutely.
Towards the end.
Absolutely.
And when you don't want to drink anymore, because I didn't want to drink towards the end, and that's when I knew I had a chemical dependence, like a physical dependence, because when you don't want to drink, like you really don't want to drink, but you feel like you have to, I would get like shakes towards the end. I'm like, okay, this is the time. Like, this is how I know I have to stop. So that was sort of like my experience. But thank you for sharing that, because I think a lot of people may hopefully reevaluate their relationship with alcohol. And that was the question that my therapist asked. She said, what is your relationship like with alcohol within that first session? And I was like, nobody has ever asked me that before. Because it's usually like, do you have a problem with drinking? You know, like she was just like, you define it. What's your relationship like with alcohol? And I was like, healthy. Mm-hmm. It is healthy. That was like my defense.
Denial.
Yes, denial. Yeah, I think, I mean, I drink more than you're supposed to drink. I know that, but like,
doesn't everybody?
Yeah, everyone. And I think a lot of people do though. And like,
absolutely,
whatever the recommendation is, like when you go to the doctor for your annual, whatever, your checkup, he's asking how many alcoholic beverages I consume in a week or a month. And I'm like, what are you supposed to consume? Whatever that number is, that's the number.
That's what I'm doing. Yes.
Yeah. It's crazy. I like to ask all of my guests this question. So what are you doing to protect your sobriety? I know you touched on some things before, but like if you had to give like one general thing that really impacts your sobriety the most that helps you stay sober, what would you say?
Talking about it. Absolutely. Finding a community and sharing about it. In the beginning, I was like, secretly stalking sober IG, just like scrolling and liking, but like never really commenting, never talked about my sobriety. But I didn't truly like start really sharing about my sobriety till I was over a year sober. And it was amazing to see that there was all of these people, because I didn't know any sober people in real life. The weird thing is I have sober people in my family. And it's just so, it's not talked about. Like, it's just not, people don't share about it until I started sharing about it. And then all these people came out of the woodworks. And I was like, I've got a great aunt who's been sober for like 50 years. Like, how did I not know that? she met her husband in AA. Like, how did I not know about this stuff? You know, I knew about the alcoholism in my family, but I didn't know about the, you know, that there were people making other choices. But yeah, sharing and finding a community.
That's the part too. Like, why are we not uplifting positive stories as well? Because yeah, you're right. Like, I hear more negativity around, you know, alcoholism than I do about like positivity about sobriety. And you're absolutely right about talking about it, because in talking about it, I have had family members reach out to me and people just in my inner circle that I had no idea that were dealing with some of the issues that I was dealing with deep in the throes of my drinking. And they're like, oh my gosh, thank you for, you know, being the one to say something about this. And this is a big part of why I feel so connected to this podcast and like just sharing true messages of people sober who are uplifted by their sobriety, right? Not like they feel victimized by their addiction or, you know, and some people are sober that haven't struggled with drinking problems in the past. I find that you can help people more by showing positive, like the positive impact, than scaring them with the negative, if that makes sense.
Right.
So like, it's great to know all the health risks, right? Like you're 9 times more likely to have breast cancer if you drink, like all of those things, right? That's scary, but that doesn't really change people's perception. If anything, now I feel anxious and now I want to drink, versus sharing with someone like, hey, like you mentioned, I'm the first person on the dance floor. You don't need a drink. Come over here. Like, let's just have a good time. Like that is, I think, has more impact than me trying to scare people with facts about how terrible alcohol is for you, even though we know it's terrible.
Absolutely.
So I love that you're sharing and you're, you know, like I said, like I found your page because you were just like so open, and I like it in your profile. You said, I don't think you use the word quirky, but you're just like, I'm a weird sober girl or something
I'm
like
a weirdo.
That. And I was like, you're a weirdo. And I was just like, I'm a weirdo too. Like that's speaking to me. Like, I really like that. And I think that people can be authentically, like, that's what I hear from you. Like, you are your authentic self more so now. and sobriety than when you were drinking.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Well, Christina, I really thank you for coming on the podcast. Is there anything you want to say or share in these final moments before we wrap up?
I'll just say, like I said, I'm coming up on 30 months sober here on the 15th of September. I know, so excited.
Give you a shout out. I'm going to write that down.
But be on the lookout. I've got some products coming out to help support sober women in their journeys. That'll be out in the month of September. So be on the lookout. I'll be sharing more about it soon.
Okay, everyone, you need to follow Christina at Sisters in Sobriety. I will plug somewhere along the screen and include in the show notes her Instagram so you can stay tuned for all of the wonderful products that she's going to drop in September. What a great time. I love this. I'm happy that you're coming up to your 30 months. I also just love fall, so I'm really getting excited to have a switch up because it is hot, okay?
It is hot.
I like to cool down. And last note, just on sobriety in summer, because I got sober in the summer, which I thought was going to be the hardest because everyone's like, oh, like I'm out drinking in the summer, rooftop, whatever.
Right.
But I actually found that it was when I stopped drinking in the summer, I was a lot cooler. Like it's just so you overheat when you drink. Yeah.
Yes.
I actually find holiday season. So like this is always a trying time, I think, for people who feel like their sobriety is at risk because just all the holidays in the fall. But fall is by far my favorite season.
Fall is my favorite.
So we will help people stay sober.
Yes, along the way.
Thank you, Christina. I so appreciate you.
Alrighty. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. All right, bye.